On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Is Wemby worthy of starting in the All-Star game? And which other players are on our Western Conference ballots? And how many times can we say Nikola Jokic's name on this Victor Wembanyama-themed episode? That and more coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Big Number. This week, got a big number for y'all. Got one every Thursday. Drops right here on Yahoo Sports. 5 stars, rate and review. Please subscribe. Tell your buddies. If you're going to All-Star Weekend, go tell your buddies at All-Star Weekend. If you're not going to All-Star Weekend, tell your friends anyway about The Big Number. And Dan, I've got snow outside. It's feeling frigid around here, but things are warming up around the All-Star game, and we're getting an All-Star theme big number. What's going on, Dan?
Not much. I'm sorry to hear that it's cold down in Charlotte. I believe that was part of the contract. It's not supposed to happen when you're that far down in the world, but I hope that you and yours are staying warm and safe. And Tom, I'm ready to put up some numbers, so why don't you tell me what this week's big number is?
Well, Dan, this week's big number is 8. Because Victor Wembanyama, if he starts the All-Star game, would be the 8th youngest player ever to start the All-Star game. And that is quite an achievement if you think about all the young studs that have been in the NBA coming in, putting up big numbers, becoming a fan favorite, starting the All-Star game. Of course, the youngest ever to do it is Kobe Bryant at 19 years old, was starting the All-Star game for the Los Angeles Lakers. We've got Zion on that list. We've got LeBron on that list. Shaquille O'Neal, Luka Doncic. And there is Victor Wembanyama. Wemby, who has a shot, and I would dare say a great shot at becoming the 8th youngest player ever in NBA history to start the All-Star game. I think he actually very much deserves it. When you look at the numbers, this guy, yeah, he's playing on a Spurs team that's below 500, 3 games below 500. You say, hey, too early for this guy. At least get a winning record or a team that's good before we put you in. I say no. That is old Neanderthal thinking, is the idea that we have like only the measuring stick is just, is your team good? Because this guy, Victor Wembanyama, is putting up ridiculous numbers. And when we look at the on-court, off-court metrics, it is baffling how much this guy means to the San Antonio Spurs. So 24.4 points per game, 10.8 rebounds, 4 blocks, 3.7 assists, and 3.2 threes. Entering this season, there have been 13 players that have accomplished those numbers. I'm saying 24, 10, 3, and 3. I could go 24, 10, 3, and 4, the number of blocks he's had, but I'll even lower the slider down to 3. There's 13 players, Dan, that have averaged those numbers for a full season, and 8 of them ended up starting the All-Star game. Majority of them started the All-Star game. We got guys like Hakeem. We got guys like Kareem. We got guys like David Robinson, Shaq. These are the guys that Victor Wembanyama is tracking against at 21 years old. And I say 21 years old because when you look at the average age of the guys in NBA history who have put up Wemby numbers, their average age is 29. 29, Dan. So
29, which is 8 more than 21. Kobe Bryant was the youngest to start the All-Star game. What did he wear? Number 8, Tom, if it's everywhere. It's everywhere we look around us.
Yeah. I have incepted the world here, and now everything is coming up 8s. And look, Victor Wembanyama, he's 8 feet tall. Don't check me on that.
It's true.
If you round up, if he's 7'6", 7'5", round up to 7'6", and then it becomes 8, right? It's just basic math. I want to say he might not get it on the fan vote because at the most recent fan vote, he was actually 4th in the Western Conference among bigs. You had Nikola Jokic at 2.9 million. You had right beneath that, you had LeBron James and Kevin Durant. And coming up 4th is Wemby at 2.2 million. So the fans aren't necessarily sold in terms of that pure wattage of votes, but the All-Star game is not just the fan vote anymore. It's 50% fan vote. It's 25% dorks like us in the media. And then 25% of the real ones the players who vote on this and probably their buddies and themselves to be an all-star starter. But I do think that Victor Wembanyama should be an all-star starter. 21 years old, be damned. Like, I do think that this guy's ready. He's proven that he's an all-star starter caliber player. It's just whether the world has understood how good this guy is. And the box score stats prove it. We'll get into the on-court, off-court stuff in a bit. But Dan, I've laid out my case for Victor Wembanyama to start, but I haven't said who my starters are that he's joining on the All-Star list. So I'm going to start with the East. I'll go with the Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell backcourt starting in the East, both of them.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Giannis. I'll go Jason Tatum and Karl-Anthony Towns rounding out the starting five on the Eastern side. And then I think Wemby's going to make it. And I've got two other bigs that I want to keep it under wraps until I hear what you have on your list. But generally speaking, Victor Wembanyama, all-star starter. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to answer your question by starting with a question. Do you have an official vote? Like, are you one of the media members that's part of the pool?
I am not, Dan. I am not. I haven't gotten to that level. I'm assuming you have.
Okay, well, I think that that's the wrong way to frame it, that you haven't gotten to that level. You've probably lapped that level and come back around. Yeah, I'm one of the gluttons for punishment that says yes when offered the opportunity. But I'm asking because, A, if anybody has any arguments with Tom's ballot, now you can't say anything. Now no one can get mad because Tom doesn't have a real vote. And if I have you have a problem with mine, you can reach me always at Kevin O'Connor, NBA. So what I will say about Victor Wembanyama, I agree with you that he deserves to be one of the starting front court players for the Western Conference. I don't even necessarily think it's that hot a take for a few reasons. One, the guys you mentioned who have done it at this age or younger than this age, the thing they all had in common was these are phenoms. These are players who reached the league with a rarely seen level of hype and then lived up to it and performed in a way that like left you slack-jawed and, you know, begging for more. And that is Victor Wembanyama to a T, right? Like, before he got came to the NBA last season, I wound up writing a column that was sort of wondering how it was even possible he could live up to that level of hype. And now it feels like we have to invent new things that could potentially be a ceiling for him to bump up on because he's getting so stratospheric so quickly. That's just like the general idea of this is an exhibition to showcase the faces of the league and for fans to be able to say, that's who I want to watch. And yeah, it might not wind up being that he gets into that top three ahead of the most famous players in the world, He's knocking on the doorstep. And that's pretty incredible this early in his career. And I think he's going to be the kind of player, once you get a general look at him, you want to see a hell of a lot more. So I think that's part of why the deserve maybe doesn't have as much to do with it as much like this is spectacle and there's no better spectacle in the league than him. But then, as you mentioned, the actual on-court case is really, really good. There's the scoring efficiency component to it. There's volume. He has been one of the most efficient high-volume scorers in the entire NBA. There are six players in the league that are using more than 30% of their team's possessions and have a true shooting percentage above 590. And it's Jokic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jason Tatum, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kevin Durant, and Vic. And Wembanyama, like he's already in terms of the usage rate and the efficiency scoring, in part because, as we've talked about before, the 3-point shooting is off the charts for a guy this big. He's already that kind of like volume efficiency monster. And the Spurs are terrible on defense, but when Wembanyama is on the floor, they defend like the Celtics.
If
he's probably going to win Defensive Player of the Year, or if nothing else, has a real good case for it, and is a well over 20, like near 25 point per game scorer on, you know, above average efficiency, bordering on elite efficiency. Where is the argument for him not being deserving of that kind of status? So, the thing we always run into in these conversations is there's three spots and there's always more than three guys, right? So there will be players we can make a case for who might have, you know, equally as good an argument for doing it, or the case may be, but to say that he wouldn't be deserving of it, I don't think the facts support that. I think the facts support he's absolutely one of the guys in that mix, and I think that it's a really good case for him to make it. He was on my ballot. So if you want to get mad at me, you can go for it. But I don't think you're going to get too mad if you get a good look
and
at
Victor Wembanyama. Where can people write you? Where can people write you if they do have complaints again?
One more time. That's Kevin O'Connor, MBA. That's where you can send all complaints about my work.
So I think when you look at the numbers, of course, you see the on-court box score numbers, which jump off the page. And we've talked about this on The Big Number. Go back and listen to the episode. When I at least was the idiot who said he wasn't going to be a great shooter going forward. He's going to make less than three threes per game. But we pointed out that he was the first player in NBA history, tracking to be the first player in NBA history with three made three pointers a game and three blocks per game. And now he's at four blocks per game. So the box score numbers, we get it. The fact that he's got, you know, the ridiculous averages, but the on-court, off-court impact, you mentioned it, his defense has been outstanding. But when you look overall, the Spurs are at plus 114 with Wemby on the floor. When he's off the floor, they're minus 172, okay? That swing is the third largest swing in the NBA once you do a per 100 possession basis. It's Jokic, it's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and then it's Wemby. So you can't even point to the fact that they're 19 and 22 in the standings and say like, yeah, but are they that good? Like, has Wemby really impacted the winning in ways that his box score suggests? And the answer is yes. When he is on the floor, they are absolutely a good playoff team. And when he's off the floor, they're, you know, Washington Wizards-esque. So this is the thing with Victor Wembanyama. He checks off the box in terms of box score numbers, checks off the box when it comes to impact. And I also think just the aesthetics of the game, he's got 144 blocks. The next highest guy in the NBA has 84. 144 to 84 is the lead, the commanding lead that he has. He has more blocks this season, Dan, than Rudy Gobert, Evan Mobley, and Kristaps Porzingis combined. Stack them. Rudy Gobert, Evan Mobley, and then on top of that, Kristaps Porzingis, and Wemby has more blocks than those three guys combined. We talked about earlier how he's averaging three-pointers a game. I'm also adding the percentage here. So he's made more threes and at a better clip than Fred VanVleet, Tyrese Maxey, and James Harden. So he's got more block shots than three of the best, you know, big man rim protectors combined. And he's shooting more prolifically, better percentages than three of the best shooters in the NBA. So Wemby, he's a walking dunk. He's got 70 plus dunks. He's every time down the floor, you have to kind of like watch everything he's doing because you don't know what he's going to pull off. So I just think he's got the full package and he deserves to be all-star starter. And we're going to reveal coming up after the break, your four Western Conference starters next to Victor Wembanyama. And I will see if my list matches up with yours coming up right after the break. All right, Dan, so we both have Victor Wembanyama as the all-star starter in the Western Conference. The way it works is there's going to be two guard spots, three forward spots, one of which is already taken by Big Vic. So, Dan, why don't we find out what your other four starters are and, I guess, one number attached to each of your votes. Let me hear your first one. What do you got?
All right, so our first of four little numbers this week, I'm guessing I don't have to do too hard a sell job on it, but we'll go with 62.7. That is how many points of offense Nikola Jokic is producing for the Denver Nuggets per 36 minutes of floor time. 62.7 per 36. That's a lot. Using the points created metric by first introduced by Zach Cram of The Ringer, my former colleague, it's a way to account for the individual points a player scores himself, the points he generates through assist, and points generated through screen assist, the old fan Rudy Gobert favorite stat, where you pop somebody loose so they can score. You add all that up, the raw numbers, you average it out by 36 minutes, and the Nuggets, nearly 63 points of the Nuggets offense per 36 minutes of floor time is what Jokic is producing. Guess where that ranks in the league?
I'm guessing first.
Yeah, and like by a stupid amount. Like number two is Giannis Antetokounmpo at 54.5. So more than 8 points per 36 difference. That gap between one and two is the same as the gap between Giannis in two in second place and Alper and Şengün in 11th. So basically lapping the other top 10 guys. And that's where Nikola Jokic is. Again, I'm guessing I don't need to sell you too hard on the three-time MVP, maybe going to be a four-time MVP as a starter for the Western Conference. But if I had to start someplace, he literally creates more points for his team than any other player in the league by a lot. Seemed like a pretty good start.
Yeah, I really just wanted to take this opportunity to just say crazy stuff about Jokic. You know,
yeah, like, it's always fun.
It just like, what is the craziest Jokic that you can come up with? And let's just spend a couple minutes on that. Because again, we don't need to campaign for Jokic to be on the All-Star starter list, but we should campaign for some of the things that he's doing on the floor so that people realize what they're watching. Right. That's an amazing stat. And when you put it in context of this one, it really just drives home how unique this guy is. So you're talking about he's creating 60 plus points basically every night by showing up, scoring, passing, and with his screen setting. Here is what's fascinating about that. When you look at the players in the top 10 in assists, you got guys like Trae Young, who's leading the league in assists per game, 11 plus. Then you got Jokic, you got guys like James Harden, Chris Paul, LeBron James, Tyrese Halliburton, LaMelo Ball, Jalen Brunson. I looked up the time of possession for those guys. So you're talking, you know, all these points that he's creating. The thing about Jokic is that he's not ball dominant. He's not a guy who's going to hold the ball, dribble around, create offense by just bouncing the air out of the ball. This guy dribbles 14 times per assist. I want to put in context what that means. He has 1.36 dribbles per touch. Okay. One dribble per touch.
That's not a lot.
Trae Young has 4.8, Cade Cunningham is 5, Tyrese Halliburton has 4, James Harden has 4.7, Jalen Brunson has 6.2 dribbles per touch.
Yeah.
Nikola Jokic is at 1.36, okay? So when you do the math to translate his dribbles per assist, so think about all of his 10 assists a game, basically, he's dribbling 14 times in total for those assists. The other 9 in the top 10 in assists are averaging 47 dribbles per assist. And Jokic is at 14. So it's just the efficiency by which he gets these buckets for his teammates, by the efficiency of he gets his own buckets. It's just, this is why people love playing with Nikola Jokic, right? Is because he's not doing it in a way where you have to watch him. You have to ball watch and just be like, wait, is this guy, what is he going to do at this point?
Right.
He is a guy who gets everybody involved without holding on to the ball, which is absurd. I mean, Jalen Brunson dribbles 560 times per game. Jokic, by comparison, is 140 times per game. Okay,
wow.
So he's getting these 10 assists. He's scoring 30 points a game without holding on to the ball. And that just screams mastery, and that screams all-star starter.
Absolutely. And in the interest of keeping the ball moving, because we could sit here and talk about how cool Nikola Jokic is all day, let's keep it moving. Let's go to the second little number today, this week, which is 13. That is the total number of individual player seasons, thanks to our friends at StatHead and their database, in which a player has averaged 30 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals per game. 30, 5, 5, and 2 steals a game. That goes back to 73 when the NBA first started tracking steals.
Yeah.
So that's 13 total player seasons. One dude has more than one such season. You might know him. His name is Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
Mm.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is on pace for his second. He's going to join Michael Jordan this year if he keeps this up, because he's over 35, 5, and 2 again, second straight year. Again, I don't think I have to sell you too hard on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who finished second in MVP voting last year, all NBA first team the last 2 years, might be the front runner for the award this season with the Oklahoma City Thunder. But the idea of saying it's two guys in a group, Michael Jordan and him, seems like a pretty good place to start on SGA too.
Yeah, and it's, again, you can point to the fact that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has these box score numbers, but it pales in comparison to his impact on court, off court stuff. He is the head of that snake on offense and on defense. Both sides of the floor, he sets the tone. And again, Jokic has always been just a titan when it comes to those on-court, off-court differentials, right? But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is right there with him this season. And no matter who's out on the floor, as long as Shai's there, like they're going to be outscoring the opponent by a ridiculous amount. And they just not much you can do. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he's a three-level scorer. He prides itself on not like foul hunting, you know, foul baiting and being a foul merchant. He still does that from time to time, but it's because he's so shifty and so slithery that he's just like, how do you guard that guy? So Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I mean, what can you say? He's incredible. I think I still have him as my MVP, but definitely all-star starter for me and Jokic, and he, I mean, cemented. So now we get into the more interesting ones, right? Like after those two guys, I think it gets a little bit more interesting. So who else do you have on the list?
Our third little number is 0.827, our littlest number so far. It's smaller than one. That is how many points per possession opponents are scoring on Anthony Davis this season. That is how many points per possession Anthony Davis is allowing this season, according to Synergy Sports. That is the sixth lowest number among 162 players who've guarded at least 300 possessions so far this season. So basically top five level of individual stopping power that Anthony Davis gives you on a night-to-night basis. Oh, he's also averaging 26 points, 12 rebounds, and 3.5 assists per game, shooting like 600 true shooting percentage. So he gives you a ludicrous level of all over the half court defensive versatility and potency. And he also scores and rebounds and distributes the ball like one of the greatest centers of all time, because it turns out that's what he is. I went with AD for my final starting spot in the front court. There are a number of great options there. I'm wondering who you would have put on your ballot.
All right. So is this the point in the conversation where we say, man, this was brutal. I lost yes. sleep doing right. this. My apologies to everybody involved in the league, and then have like an honorable mention of like 17 names to just like get everybody out.
I'm happy you've been reading the column. That's good to know. I'm glad to know that you've seen how it works.
Yeah, you gotta just like come out with like two paragraphs of just I cried the entire time I wrote this. Just want you to, the reader, and I don't know, are we writing towards the players there? Are we writing to the readers there? I don't know why we do this, but I feel compelled always to say like, man, this was such a hard thing.
I'll tell you the saddest truth, because I think it hit me right in the middle of my chest, and I think it's right. I had an editor once go, you're writing that for Twitter so you don't get yelled at. And I was like, man, that's exactly what I'm doing. You are 100% right. And I just felt real small and low for a while. But in any event, so we're making our apologies. Who should I be apologizing to, Tom?
Domantas Sabonis. You just took your foot and stomped him in the chest. Draymond Green.
Yeah, Draymond, no apologies to Draymond this season.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? He's probably not going to apologize back to you. Even if he did feel hurt or did something to you, he'd be able to be like, I wasn't there. I was there, but I actually wasn't there. I was not in the right space. So when you look at Domantas Sabonis, you have to mention his clutch performance this season. According to Inpredictable.com, he's been the best clutch shooter in the NBA, adding more win probability with his shot making than anybody in the league. And if you look at just box score numbers in the last 5 minutes, game within five, you see it. He's 14 of 18 in clutch situations this season. 14 of 18, okay? Since Doug Christie took over, he's shooting 61% from the floor, 65% on threes. He is now the leading three-point shooter by percentage, not by volume. It's about a few times in per game. Domantas Sabonis might be the most underrated player, at least in the regular season, in the NBA. The guy is like, he's like the Toyota Jokic. Like if Jokic is a Lexus, he's like a Toyota Jokic, right? Like he's so good, but like there's Jokic. So we can't, no, he's a
Toyokic.
Toyokic. Yeah. He's a Toyokic. This is what we're dreaming up on this show.
I love this. This is great.
Do you, Dan, do you think that, I feel like people would appreciate, I hate that it's a loaded word, but like, I feel like they would praise or get Domantas Sabonis's greatness, at least in the regular season, because there's postseason issues and being the rim protector. If there was no Jokic, like you look at his numbers, I'm going to pull him up right now. I already said what he was shooting with under Doug Christie. They're 9-2 under Doug Christie, and he's been awesome. But this season, he's scoring 21 points a game, 14 rebounds, which leads the NBA, 6.3 assists, and 60% from the floor. He's just so ludicrously efficient. And there's three main things, Dan, that I'm looking at in terms of like, how do I put into all of these different categories and, you know, synthesize it into a vote or a pick. One is the box score numbers, like we're citing 20 points per game, 10 rebounds. The other is on-court, off-court data. And the third, I think, is important, is your performance in crunch time, because I think leverage, weighted minutes matters. Minutes that have a huge swing in your chances, your team performing, I think is important. Like, not every point, not every assist is the same. And I do think clutch performance should be a part of this. And Domantas Sabonis, according to InPredictable.com, Michael Bowie does a fantastic job at that site, posted not just your shot making, win probability increasing in clutch situations, but also rebounds. He's an incredible rebounder in clutch situations, winning games with his rebounds and his putbacks this season. And Domantas Sabonis, for me, I don't think Anthony Davis's defense is that much better than Domantas Sabonis. I think Sabonis, just everything offensively, I'm giving him the nod here.
We have to keep the ball moving like Nikola Jokic, our patron saint. But I think the very feeling of, is Anthony Davis that much better at defense than Domantas Sabonis? My first immediate thing was, yeah, he is. Yeah. He's absolutely better at defense than Domantas Sabonis. But your larger point of the way that Sabonis rebounds on the defensive end, ending possessions there, is gigantic. It has a huge, huge amount of value for the Kings. The Kings are on pace now to be an above average defense for the first time in, I think, literally 20 years or close to. And Sabonis playing giant minutes, never missing a game, and being, even though he's not an elite rim protector by any stretch of the imagination, he's playing a big role in that. So he was one of my not honorable mentions. He actually did make, if I had a choice on reserves, I'd put him on there. But as we know, the coaches pick that, not me. But I think you're absolutely right. Super, super richly deserving. And this is one of those things, like we said, it's kind of a coin flip. Or you know, if you think there's four guys or five guys that deserve to make it in the front court, three of them get the starting nod, and then two of them wind up on the bench, winds up coming out in the wash. So Domantas Sabonis is certainly richly deserving there. We'll move on to, this is like, I'm kind of double dipping here on my last of the little numbers. So there's really five of them, but it's for that fourth spot. 785. That is how many minutes Luka Doncic has played this season, because he's missed the last month with a left calf strain.
Oh, right. Yep.
Does not appear to be on his way back anytime soon. And as near as I can tell, according to our friends at Stathead again, only six players have ever been named an all-star while playing fewer minutes. Michael Jordan in 1986, Penny Hardaway in 1998, Alonzo Mourning and Grant Hill in 2001, Yao Ming in 2011, and Kobe Bryant in 2014 when he was working his way back from the Achilles rupture and didn't play at all, but was Kobe Bryant, so everyone voted for him. It is possible that Luka Doncic gets voted in and has the level of support because he was playing at an MVP level before his injury. I wound up dropping him off my ballot because 22 games and 785 minutes felt a little bit light to be able to put him in, but we want to acknowledge him. He would have had that spot probably on everybody's ballot had he not gotten hurt.
Yeah, well, now Luka Doncic has said, thank you, Dan. I accept your apology. And I do think that when we say who's Luka Doncic's replacement, I'm going Steph.
Well, that brings me to the second of our fourth little numbers, I guess our 4.5th little number, 17.3, because that is how many points per 100 possessions better on offense the Golden State Warriors are when Stephen Curry is out there. The only player to have with a bigger on-court, off-court swing, we've been saying his name a lot, his name is Nikola Jokic. So in terms of what Stephen Curry does, now obviously everybody knows we unfortunately tanked the Golden State Warriors season by praising Stephen Curry on this podcast, saying he was the best offensive player since Michael Jordan, and that the Warriors were on an unstoppable rocket ride to another championship. Things went a little bit differently since we had that discussion on our podcast, but yeah. Stephen Curry, still extremely good, and they're still basically getting the version of Stephen Curry, even though the individual scoring numbers are down, the per-game scoring numbers, the shot-making efficiency is down a bit, but from Steph Curry levels, which are off this screen right here, where my left hand is. But they're still getting that level of production. And on a per minute per possession basis, I think there's a really strong argument that he has been the other best guard in the Western Conference, even as the Warriors themselves have been struggling through it. What say you?
Yeah, I have Steph here, and a lot of it is based on, like, I'm a little worried that the Dennis Schroeder acquisition is sabotaging his case.
It's been rough.
It's been really rough, and I don't want to hold it against Steph, but when he's on the floor without Dennis Schroeder, he's scoring 37 points every 100 possessions, according to pbpstats.com. He's shooting 43% from three, and he's shooting effective field goal percentage is 60%, according to pbpstats.com. That is Steph Curry, prime Steph Curry.
Yes.
Okay. When he's playing with Dennis Schroeder, it goes from 37 to 25. Okay, his three-point field goal percentage is 33%, and his effective field goal percentage is 48%. That is Keyonte George numbers. I love you, Keyonte George, but we got to do something about this, Dan, whether it's picketing, whether it's going outside Chase Center and saying, please don't do this to Steph. This is sad what's happening to the Warriors. We can't let Steph Curry have to watch Dennis Schroeder run the offense anymore. We can't. And I know Draymond's hurt, so it's like, what are they going to do? But this is sad. My vote for Steph is, I could back it up with like 100 advanced metrics. But really, this is my opportunity to say, we need to do something about this Dennis Schroeder acquisition and how it's sabotaging Stephen Curry and the greatness of it all. It just is, the Warriors are sad at this point. The Boston Celtics game was an atrocity. And I really feel like Steph Curry, he should be at the All-Star game just by virtue starting because, yes, it's in San Francisco, but also get him some real teammates. Sorry. What happened to this team? We had him pegged for like over and under 2.5 for rounds one in the postseason. We were like basically cementing them in blood and in ink that they were going to make it to the Western Conference Finals. And this is what it's become, that we're doing these pity votes for Stephen Curry. Not pity votes. This isn't a charity case. He deserves it. But it's just, please, please put some real players that can work next to Stephen Curry. I beg you. Thank you.
I think that what we're finding out is that the name that we should have atop our MVP ballots is DeAnthony Melton. As soon as DeAnthony Melton got hurt, the Warriors season completely went sideways. Dennis Schroeder, you understood the idea. It was, we need somebody else who can score and who can run the offense, but it feels like the team is rejecting his arrival like an organ transplant that didn't take. But be that as it may, organ transplant segue, Stephen Curry remains the heart of the Golden State Warriors, and the level of production that he's put on the floor when he's out there without rejected limbs suggests that he should still be an All-Star, and we both have him as a starter alongside our man Victor Wembanyama, who's could wind up being the eighth youngest player ever to start the All-Star game. That's our big number this week, 8. Tom, get us out of here before we start getting too sad about Steph.
I think what you just said was DeAnthony Melton should be the MVP.
Yeah. If there's one poll quote.
One poll quote, it's DeAnthony Melton is the MVP. All right. After the break, we're going to go through our over-unders, add a couple more, and revisit the scoreboard. All right, Dan, it's time to revisit the over-under scoreboard. We've done 24 picks, okay? You've hit 16 of them correctly. I've hit 14 of them correctly. So that means that you are winning 16 to 14. Nothing flipped this week. There wasn't anything that you had right that is now wrong, and I didn't have anything that was wrong that was right. So you still maintain your +2 lead. I'm going to continue to apologize since this is the apology tour on the big number. I'm going to apologize to Russell Westbrook here. His on-court offensive rating, basically when he's on the floor, the Denver Nuggets, their on-court offensive rating with him on the floor is 116.5. When we taped this a few weeks ago, week two, when we did this, it was at 87.5. We set the over under at 100, and now it's at 116.5. You took the over, I took the under, which seems blasphemous, but they've been a really good fit. Last week, we talked about Cade Cunningham and his assists per game. We set the over-under at 9. It's now at 9.3. It was at 9.4, so it's down a little bit since then. We still haven't gotten a Detroit trade yet. We set the over-under at 0.5 at the trade deadline. That's still TBD. Mostly the big guys that we thought were going to hit threes or take threes have really not. Bam Adebayo, Anthony Davis, DeAndre Ayton have not hit their marks in terms of the over-under. But we got to add two more here, Dan. I'm not letting you celebrate. I've got to continue adding things so maybe I can chase some wins here. Are you ready for two new over-unders?
Hit me with them. What do you got?
All right. They're Wemby-related, who's slated to be the eighth youngest starter ever in the All-Star game. We're going to put his over-under on free throw attempts per game at 4.0. The reason why I put this here is because he's averaging 3.9 this season. Dan, I had told KOC, I was like, I think he's going to break Kobe Bryant's 81-point scoring record because he's going to get to the free throw line more. And in fact, he is doing the opposite. He's not getting to the free throw line much at all. In the last, let's see here. In the last 5 games, here's his total: 0, 2, 0, 0, and 6 in the free throw attempts column. I am a little worried about this because it seems like he's almost too good at avoiding contact. It's kind of like the rub when you have all this athleticism and like proprioception where you can sense things all around you, Matrix style, is that you're avoiding contact rather than going through it. So I'm actually going to go over, because I think he's going to correct himself. The iOS system is going to correct itself over 4.0. What say you?
I mean, it's like everybody's already bored by talking about proprioception. Everybody already knows, you know? I mean, we don't got to belabor these points that everybody's familiar with, Tom. I'm going over too, because I have the principle, the long-held, backed-up by science principle of, oh, well, he's due. He's going to be due for some more free throw attempts. So if he hasn't had very many recently, those numbers are going to go up. Also, you said 3.9 for the season. Last 2 months, it's 4.1. So he's just on the right side of it more recently. So let's go with that. He's due. And also, the arrow's trending up. Take the over on Victor Wembanyama.
Do you remember John Hollinger wrote a column when Derrick Rose was after his like rookie season, where he was like, if Derrick Rose wants to make the leap, he has to learn how to draw more fouls. And it was this like mind-blowing concept of like, hey, he's got all this athleticism and he's super talented and efficient, but he's got to learn how to get to the line. I feel like we're at that same point with Wemby, is if he wants to take that another leap, if it's possible, go through contact. So, which brings me to my next one, is maybe part of the reason why he's not getting to the free throw line a lot is because his average shot distance this season is 17 feet away from the basket. I argue that that is too far away. Then he went on this like 3-point barrage right after I said that. I'm going to say that it's going to trend down. In order for his free throw attempts to go up, I think his shot distance, average shot distance, has to go down. I'm going to say, I'm going to take the under on his shot distance at 17 feet away from the basket. What say you?
I'm going over, because he took a third of his shots from 3-point range last year. That's up to 48% this year. I think, again, the arrow is going up on this one. I think he's only going to take more of his shots from further away, because it turns out when he hits them, things go boom for the San Antonio Spurs offense. And he seems to like being out there. So my guess is he's going to keep taking shots from further away, and that's going to continue to go up. So give me the over. Maybe the rule should just be, if it's Victor Wembanyama, take the over, like kind of whatever it is. But if in this case, shot distance, I think it's going to keep going up, much to the chagrin of all us crusty old folks that want to see him get his ass on the block, show you a hook over each shoulder. Maybe not so much. Maybe the future looks a little bit different for a guy like Victor Wembanyama.
Maybe I'm already regretting this, because you know in the All-Star game, he's not going to take any free throws. Like, he's just going to bomb away from three.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to unveil his new, inside game in the All-Star game. I think he's probably going to go free throw line to free throw line, Zach Harper style.
I want him to purposely miss a three so that he can rebound the putback and dunk it like he did in Europe that one time. I want to see it just once in the All-Star. Purposely miss. Don't do the T-Mac and the Kobe throwing it off the backboard and then dunking it. Why don't you purposely miss a three and then dunk the putback? That's what I want to see.
That's what I want to see. It sounds good to me. But as long as you do that while also maintaining your shot distance in real games further than 17 feet away, so I can keep up my commanding lead over Tom Haberstroh.
All right, enough out of you. Dan. I hate it. I hate it. It's, you know what? I'm just glad that we disagreed on that last one so I can make up some ground here. That's going to do it for us today. Thank you to Emmy for producing the podcast and the entire squad behind the scenes, making this the great show that it is. Thanks so much for watching The Big Number on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a rating and a review. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. Until then, please be safe and enjoy the Thursday night unveiling of the All-Star starters, which deservedly should have Victor Wembanyama on it.
Don't yell at us on social media.
Please do. And direct it all to Kevin O'Connor NBA.